Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Everybody, and welcome once again. We are the Long Box guys, and we are going to be thinking outside the Long Box today. And as we have been all month, we're going to be talking about African-American superheroes, specifically some of the women African-American superheroes that we have enjoyed over the past couple of decades. With me, as always, is my good friends, LT. LT, how you doing and what you drinking?
I'm drinking some whiskey, and I'm doing okay.
Terrific. Josh, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing well, and I'm having Omegang's new oatmeal stout called Lovely Dark and Deep.
And that's perfectly apropos for what we're talking about today. Mike, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I am doing excellent, and I am drinking Embassy Sweet Well Brand Whiskey.
Oh.
Are we staying in an Embassy Suite?
We may be. Or maybe that's where I go to drink.
Yeah,
if you go to an Embassy, if you go to an Embassy Suites at around happy hour, they never ask for your card. So just a little tip for those of you who want to drink for free.
Just a little tip for all our 19-year-old listeners out there. That's where I would go if I were you. Well, as I alluded to earlier, we're all going to be talking about different superheroes. So we're going to be going around and doing a super brief background on those superheroes and then saying what we like and what our favorite run is. And everyone else, feel free to chime in if there's something that's missed or something else you like. Mike, why don't you start us off?
All right. Quick trivia question for everybody but Tom, because you always ruin it. Who was the first female black superhero in DC Comics?
First female black superhero in DC Comics.
Was it Bumblebee?
You are correct, LT. Good going. Oh, it is Bumblebee. Nice. First premiered in December 1976, Teen Titans number 45. Her name is Karen Beecher. She was the girlfriend of Mal Duncan, who was a member of the Teen Titans, but she didn't like how the Titans were treating him. So as people are wont to do, she designed her own superpowered costume and attacked the Titans to make Mal look better in their eyes. Eventually, she felt bad about it. She confessed to the Teen Titans, and the Teen Titans were like, "You're awesome. You should totally join our group." And she ended up joining the group. Her stay didn't last very long. Her and Mal ended up getting married and moving on into the DC universe. Later on, there was an accident that stuck her at a size of 6 inches. And as a result, she ended up joining the Doom Patrol because Miles Calder, was able to give her medicine to keep her little tiny heart going. So she has had a very storied career. If you want to go check her out, she's actually in the new series that Target has for young girls called Superhero High. She is one of the superheroes at Superhero High, and she even has her own action figure now. So she's come a long way, and if you've seen her possibly on Teen Titans Go or one of the cartoon series, you probably have an idea. She can shrink down to really small. She's basically a ripoff of the Wasp, let's be serious. But She is also a remarkable genetic engineer and biochemist.
And if you're cosplaying her, the big thing you have to remember is to carry the little stingers that she had, the big bees, because if you're not carrying those things, I think you're the Wasp every single time.
Okay.
Well, that's a different color scheme.
Is she a technology superpower or a superpower?
She's technology-based superpower. She designed her own costume. Yep.
Gotcha.
Well, it's actually both, right? I mean, I don't mean to say both. I mean biological and electrical, because she has those stingers that she developed, and she also developed a way to shrink and change herself biologically. So she's a two-hit wonder there.
Yeah, she can also fly.
Flying's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's cool. I like to fly. Yeah. I can't. Yeah, I always like seeing her. I have seen a couple people cosplay her, but once again, every single time I've seen someone cosplaying Bumblebee, unless they're holding those two big stinger thingies, I've every single time thought, hey, that's a great wasp, and they're like, man, Bumblebee. Oh, damn it, sorry.
Even if they just have Bumblebee stripes, we can't. That doesn't...
Well, the thing about the wasp is she's had so many different costumes. She did have one that was
yellow and black.
Absolutely, but she did. I remember, but it wasn't
striped like that. It was more of a V, black.
It's design. Ironically funny that the Marvel allegory is wasp to the bumblebee.
Yeah,
just saying. Anyway, carry on.
Tommy, my good friend. Tommy, how are you?
Yes, I'm doing.
Tommy,
all right.
Who'd you pick? Who'd you pick to talk about?
I picked Misty Knight. Created by a friend of the show, Tony Isabella, back in 1975. Misty Knight was kind of a supporting character in a lot of the Power Man, Iron Fist, Hero for Hire comic books over the years in the 70s. She's taken a more upfront role in the Captain America and the Falcon, Sam Wilson run that we talked about last week. She was kind of Sam Wilson's kind of intel person in a lot of that series. And also she's taken more of a real lead role in Heroes for Hire. And she has a bionic arm. She used to be a police detective, but she had her arm amputated. She didn't want to give up being active. She didn't want to take a desk job, so Tony Stark gave her a bionic arm, and then she started her own detective firm, and then she became a member of the Heroes for Hire with Luke Cage and Danny Rand, etc. and so forth.
Now, I always think of her from the X-Men issues where she helped save Japan from Moses Magnum.
Oh, that was a great run.
It's true. Yeah.
Why is she one of your more favorite characters?
You know, because she's just always been a really strong female character in the background of those old Luke Cage and Power Man Iron Fist comics that you love so much, Tommy. And also, I really like the new Sam Wilson Captain America, and she's taken on a much more sort of espionage spy sort of role in that, and I really like the character in that.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you on that one, because she's also was in the all-new Captain America, the 2014 series, where Sam Wilson first became Captain America, and she ends up saving Sam from a bunch of bad guys, too, where she's gone deep undercover into Hydra. So they're really using her more as an espionage intel person rather than the traditional cop role that she had or detective.
Yeah, and I think it really suits the character better because she is such a strong female character.
And a little bit of trivia here. She had one of the first ever interracial kisses in a comic book. Who did she kiss?
Danny Rand.
Damn right she kissed Danny Rand.
That's why I cosplay Danny Rand.
Damn straight you do. Now, one year, Lainey and I, my wife and I, went to WonderCon in San Francisco. She decided to cosplay as Moss from the IT Crowd. And I was cosplaying as, of course, Luke Cage. And everyone thought she was doing Misty Knight. That is a true story. I'm not kidding about that. Like, five people came up like, hey, that's a great Misty Knight. She's like, oi, Moss.
She must have hated that.
She did. She had no idea who Misty Knight was. And I never even thought to make the connection. That's how dumb I am. So, yeah, that was my bad. Josh, who did you pick as one of your favorite African-American superheroes?
Definitely, I mean, just one of my favorite superheroes who gets her start in one of my favorite comic books of all time, Giant Size X-Men, number one, 1975. She is introduced with the second generation of X-Men, and it's written by Len Wein and then drawn by Dave Cockrum, but immediately after the release of the Giant Size X-Men number one, Claremont takes up the mantle of the X-Men and immediately makes her a major supporting character. He makes her an amazingly strong, strong-willed person, as even when she loses her powers, she still whoops up on Cyclops to become leader of the X-Men, which I loved.
That was I love that comic.
That was fantastic, right? When she just, loved it, right? And she just goes on to be one of the pillars of the X-Men. She's always there. She's always strong. She's considered one of those extra powerful characters, as they don't quite know the limits of her powers, you know. And I just always love what they've done with her, how they've treated her over the years, and how even when she does or doesn't have her powers, she's still just the one of the strongest characters on the team, especially in the willpower sense.
Yes, willpower sense. She is hard to dominate. That is absolutely certain. Anyone else have a favorite run of hers? I loved the run where she first got the Mohawk after battling the Morlocks, when she became leader of the Morlocks and she defeats Callisto. I love that particular battle, and I love that particular run.
Yeah, I thought that run was particularly good. That was kind of back in my collecting heyday. When I was really kind of going to the comic book store every week to pick up comics.
Yeah. I like that one of Callisto's.
Dracula.
Yeah. I like that Callisto, who she fought, one of her superpowers was that she had a wrist rocket slingshot. And I'm like, well, I got that. All right. Okay.
I can do that.
All right. Doing better.
Superpower
We're
check.
Getting closer. One superpower check. I got that. All right. Okay. I guess that comes to me now. I, of course, love Misty Knight. I love all these characters. But one of my favorite characters of all time, like Josh said, and African-American female characters, was Amanda Waller, also known as The Wall. Talk about your strong female characters. Amanda Waller first breaks on the scene way back in the day. I think it was 1986, Legend number one, 1986. Once again, a Len Wein production with John Byrne and John Ostrander. These are all very familiar names when it comes to these kind of characters. She was raised in Cabrini Green, where her husband and one of her sons was shot dead. She escapes these terrible projects to get her PhD. She's Dr. Amanda Waller. Put that doctor in there. In political science, she becomes a senator's aide, and she starts making her way up, mostly just by sheer willpower and intimidation, up the ranks until she starts leading Suicide Squad or Checkmate or Argus or any one of a dozen different permutations of this. Here's something I just found out today. Do you guys know what living legend actress played Amanda Waller on Smallville?
Oh, she also played Foxy Brown.
Damn right she did. Pam Grier was The Wall. I did not know that. I found that out today, and I'm so excited to find those episodes where The Wall is Pam Grier, for God's sakes. In Smallville, Angela Bassett took on the role. She's been played by quite a few others. Viola Davis in the film. Viola Davis in the film Suicide Squad. Viola Davis, by the way, one of the most exceptional actresses of our time, and she did that role. Even though the movie wasn't altogether perfect, she really brought justice to that role, I thought. I think my favorite run for Amanda Waller was probably when she's a foil for Batman, especially in the Justice League Unlimited series, where she lets him know straight off that she's not to be messed with when she pulls him close and says, "Don't mess with me, rich boy," making an allusion to the fact that she probably knows who he is. Though, technically, I think she probably thinks he's Oliver Queen. Which is funny to me. You guys like love this character too, I know.
I always felt like she knew exactly who he was.
I liked the Batman was broken once mentally, but in the comic book series The Cult by Deacon Hellstorm. Mm-hmm. Or Deacon Hellfire, excuse me. And at one point in the Justice League comic, Suicide Squad crossover, Amanda Waller is, Batman's trying to intimidate her, and she's like, "Hey, how's your friend Deacon Hellfire?" Just as a little more of a dig into Batman, like, "Yeah, you've been broken. I know I could do it if I wanted to."
She's better than Deacon Hellfire, for God's sakes.
Seriously. Yeah, I love Josh. I love Waller. I love the character. I've always she's always been that super like intimidating personality that you know where there's that sort of variance of where if you think of her as a male character, right, everybody would be cheering about how much of a badass she is. But there's sort of that slight that women get when there's that when they're that powerful, and I think that makes her even cooler.
Absolutely, she is battling that that stigma. That she's reaching too far. Maybe she's trying to overcompensate. Maybe any one of the 100 other things that women are sometimes, stigmatized with just for being a powerful and intelligent person. Amanda Waller certainly isn't intimidated by that in the comic books or in any of the TV series. And I look forward to seeing this character more and more. Now, she's gone through kind of a lot of different body types. From, you know, Pam Grier to Viola Davis. In the comic book, she was kind of more of a intimidating, physical being, a little on the large and squat size. Do you guys think that that change has anything to do with the character or society or perhaps just the way the character? I mean, I can't think of a male character that has the body type changed that many times.
Kingpin,
I can't remember a single time Kingpin was thin. Mike?
Well, I wouldn't call, what's his name? D'Onofrio. I wouldn't call him Kingpin sized.
He's not exactly Kingpin sized. That's true.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's not squat.
He's big and
he's
imposing.
Not,
he's tall.
Yeah. He's tall.
Like Kingpin would be. But
he's
definitely not. He's definitely not as overweight as Kingpin is portrayed in the comics.
That's true. I'll give you that.
Yeah,
Kingpin in the comics is definitely portrayed as a man who does things to excess, including indulges his appetites.
But don't forget, that's all muscle because he was trained as a classical sumo wrestler.
But also he indulges his appetites.
My hope but not belief is that they pick the actress who they think best represented Waller at the time, right? Regardless of body type. Not that I always believe that, but that would be like my hope and prayer, right?
Yeah.
I absolutely think Viola Davis did a great job.
Yeah, I think she was fantastic. Yeah, she was.
You can't point at anything she's ever done that was bad, though, so.
It's true.
But Nell Carter would have been better.
That's my Amanda.
It's true.
There you go.
Nobody gets that joke.
Yeah. But who's the Waller for the Arrow TV show, right?
A really thin, good-looking woman. Woman. It is not the Amanda Waller that John Ostrander imagined. If you want to get the creator of Amanda Waller's opinion, go listen to our past episode where we interviewed John Ostrander.
Her name, by the way, is Cynthia Aday Robinson, who's on Arrow. And she's lovely and a good actress also, but she never had that presence that I think the Wall needed.
Yeah, I'm a little. I'm soured on that TV show anyway. But
she did have gravitas. I'll give her that, but not enough gravitas. Yeah, I use gravitas. I'm fancy.
Yeah,
But when you think of the wall, you think of an actual wall, an unstoppable force of nature.
No, an unmovable object. Get your metaphors right, for sake!
I think of a giant wall that's going to stop the oncoming storm. But anyway.
So you're thinking Ben Grimm.
And she's going to make the Justice League pay for that wall.
She is. She is so going to make the Justice League pay for that wall. And I don't think, you know, I don't think the Berlantiverse version of the Waller is really representing that.
Amanda Waller's most feared supervillain? Evil Kool-Aid Man. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. No, it'd be oh, no. Because it's reverse. Wait, Evil Kool-Aid Man. I do not get that joke. Because she's a wall.
She's a wall.
See? It all comes back.
It all comes back to her being a wall.
And Mike, I don't think
I was on board with you, Mike.
He's evil. I mean, the Kool-Aid Man, I think he's just evil anyway.
Is he inherently evil? Yeah, he just busts through people's walls.
Like, yeah, hey, man, I just...
Douchebag.
Dude, I just fixed that.
He's been trying to destroy children's teeth for ages.
Yeah. Nothing good.
I'm sorry. Evil Kool-Aid Man was redundant. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's redundant, yeah.
All right, dude. Does
every home improvement show hates him.
All right, now, if Kool-Aid Man has come through this wall, what you're going to want is a nice spackle. Oh, yeah? Oh, no, don't. Oh,
oh yeah.
Don't say, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's how this wall got broken.
Does
anyone have a runner-up or anyone else they'd like to mention when it comes to African-American female superheroes?
I've got a trivia question for you.
I have
trivia questions for you.
Let's hear them.
In Marvel Comics, only three black female superheroes have had their own comic book title. Can you guys name any of those three?
Any of those three? And you're saying Marvel?
In Marvel Comics, only three black female superheroes have had their own title. Who are they?
Did Storm ever have a title? I don't remember Storm ever having a title.
Storm did have a title for a bit.
Yes, right, so Storm had a title. 2014 and 2015.
Did Captain Marvel, that later became Photon, did she have a title?
She did. She was actually the very first one. Captain Marvel, Volume 2.
That was going to be my second.
1989. Yeah.
That's one of my runners-up, and that was going to be my second guess. All right. Is it another Captain Marvel? Because I don't believe she's African-American.
Oh, hey, just a little side note about Photon / Spectrum / Captain Marvel. When she was originally designed, John Romita Jr. Intended her to look like Pam Grier because he always loved Pam Grier. But at the last minute, somebody said that Pam Grier wasn't good looking enough, and they found a different model for her to be under, which seems horrible because Pam Grier is just gorgeous.
Pam Grier is gorgeous. Who would say Pam Grier isn't gorgeous? Crazy. Editors at Marvel.
All right, one more. Right, so any guesses?
One more.
Give me a second. Give me a second, for God's sake.
Hold on.
I have to edit
Jeopardy.
All this silence.
Silence here. We're all thinking.
Folks, if you're listening to this podcast and you have the answer before or Josh gets it.
I'm going
to
say it's the new Iron Man.
Oh, yeah.
It's a new Iron Man.
Riri Wilson.
Riri Wilson.
Actually,
wait. There's another one then.
There is another one, yes.
There is another one because you weren't thinking about Riri. You were thinking about Devil Dinosaur.
Moon
right?
Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
That's right. Am I right?
You are right.
Boom, and Devil Dinosaur.
You guys, actually, there's five now that I think about it, because Black Panther was also a female for a while. So, wow, I was totally wrong on three. So if you are out there listening going, you idiots have forgotten one another one, you should tweet us at the Long Box Guys, at Outside the Long Box. Or,
what?
Even better, send us an email at luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com because you will be entered to win, tell them, LT.
Entered to win a signed copy of the first volume of March. That's right, signed by the illustrator, the writer, and by John Lewis. First copy of March, the comic book. That's what this giveaway is for this month.
Go and listen to this.
And even though Tom wants to win this book, there's a good chance that it will go to someone other than Tom, because that's the way we play. And
what the
also,
hell, dude?
If, email us at luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com. Also, if you are up late at night, you can also comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/longboxguys, etc. and so forth.
Who won last week's, or excuse me, last month's drawing? Because I really like Supreme Powers.
Supreme Powers is a great book. Kaylee Drake won last month's book. Good friend of the podcast and often suggester, Kaylee Drake, has won. And it will be delivered to her shortly. Hopefully she will be recovering from her surgery soon. And then it will be delivered to her, so she has something to read while she recovers.
Oh, get well soon, Kaylee. We love everybody in the Long Box Legion.
Yeah, thanks for being out there, guys. And as long as we're talking about the Long Box, Mikey, what do you got in the front of the Long Box?
I have the 2014-2015 series called Storm. Starring Storm. It was written by Greg Pak. If you are a fan of Storm from the X-Men days and you want to see her just getting out and kicking butt, this is the series that you should check out. It was a really good series. Unfortunately, it only lasted 11 issues. So if you're wanting to catch up on it, it's really easy to do. You can go to Amazon or your local comic book store and get the graphic novels. Or you can go on to Comixology and buy the whole series for like $22.
Well then, LT, what do you got at the back of the Long Box?
I'm not going too far back. I'm going back to July of 2015 to a short series called Strange Fruit, written by J.G. Jones and Mark Waid, with art by J.G. Jones. I know we talked a little bit about some of the controversy around this book when it came out. There was a lot of people that were saying that, you know, that Caucasian people couldn't accurately write about the discrimination in the black experience. But I liked this book. I thought it was well done. This book is a story about a Mississippi flood in 1927, where African Americans are practically constricted into working to fill up sandbags and help save the town. In it, an alien crash lands on the planet. He is mistaken for an African American and is also convinced into helping the local townspeople. There's tremendous amount of racism in this book, and I think it's pretty well handled, and I think it seems to be pretty well researched and pretty accurate to the time period. So, you know, keep in mind that if this book is being read by children, it should probably be explained that this is how things were and that we've progressed since then and that this is not the way that you should be treating people. But it's a great book. The art is fantastic. It's all painted, and it's just absolutely gorgeous looking, and I really enjoyed the story.
Strange Fruit has come up a couple other times. One of the better ones, and yeah, we've recommended it before, and I recommend it also. It's a great read. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent on Strange Fruit, because that's Josh's purview. Josh, do you got a tangent for us?
Yeah, so we've been talking about the Kool-Aid Man, and it got me thinking about snacks or products from your youth that are either gone or have changed so much they're unrecognizable, what do you miss?
Oh, we're going to have an argument about this, guys.
Oh, let's do this.
All right. Do you guys remember, because I won an entire week of Be Nice to Tom because of this. Do you guys remember Yankee Doodles when we were kids? Mike?
Did that have a duck mascot?
The Yankee Doodle? Yeah, it did. Well, it was a Drake cake, so yeah.
Yeah.
So they came in a they were these little chocolate cupcakes, right? And they came three to a pack, and they had no frosting on it. Remember those?
Yeah, they were kind of like the Hostess cupcakes, only without frosting and a little drier.
Oh, my God, LT, for once in your damn life, you are backing me up, and you are 100% right. And they were three to a pack.
I'm going to interject here because Yankee Doodle was Drake's brand that mimicked all things Hostess. So there were Yankee Doodle, like, yodels and Yankee Doodle. It wasn't just a Yankee Doodle. I thought
it wasn't just a cupcake.
Right? Well, they – maybe
they didn't do a Twinkie, though. They didn't do a Twinkie.
I don't remember a Twinkie, but Yankee Doodle made these stupid cupcakes that I loved because I hate, as you guys know, I hate frosting. I don't like it. Never liked it. So they made these dry-ass little cupcakes that I loved, and I came back here up from my many travels hoping to find some Yankee Doodles, and guess what? They're still around, but now the stupid things have frosting on them. And I told my wife, hey, these aren't the same. And she was like, oh, yes, they are. If you guys, by the way, Google Yankee Doodle right now, you'll see both kinds of cupcakes. Yankee Doodles with frosting and Yankee Doodles without. And I like the old Yankee Doodles without frosting. And it was actually put out by Drake's Cakes.
All right.
All right. So now the Yankee Doodles have frosting. And I told my wife they didn't. And she's like, you're crazy. They've always had frosting. I won an entire week of Be Nice to Tom because she did not know that these things used to not have frosting. So this was a big, big thing for me, this tangent that you're on, that these Yankee Doodles used to be better when I was a kid. Sorry, didn't mean to hijack your whole thing, but that was big for me.
That was the whole point.
Yeah. Anybody else have one?
Well, I've been out of the snack group, you know, shopping for a while now since I'm diabetic. But things I don't miss are Necco wafers. But as a kid, I remember eating a decent amount of Pop Rocks, and I don't know that those are still about commonly.
Oh, yeah, Pop Rocks. You can get those.
Are they still everywhere, though?
They're pretty ubiquitous.
Okay.
That's Josh, what do you got?
Pop Rocks.
So there was one that I loved when we were kids, and that just came back like last year. Funny Bones, because I love peanut butter.
Oh yeah, I remember Funny Bones.
They were my favorite.
Not. What are Funny Bones?
Yeah, they were like a kind of like a yodel, except not a yodel. Like a ring. They were long. And
like a Twinkie.
Yeah, they're like a peanut butter. They're like a peanut butter ring ding or a peanut butter Twinkie with chocolate cake.
Yeah. But there were also, if there were peanut butter Twinkie, they were also chocolate covered. So,
yes, they were, yeah. Yes. So it was chocolate kind of like an oblong peanut butter ring ding. Also, kosher. That's right, kosher.
I'm loving, now that I'm back here, by the way, in New England, I love being able to get a devil dog whenever I damn well want. I miss those. They haven't changed, but I'm just saying.
When we were kids, what's the Cookie Crisp? Cookie Crisp was a good cereal when we were kids. And then out of, like randomness, like last summer, I was like, I wonder if Cookie Crisp is still any good. And the answer to that question is no. No, it's not.
Did they change it?
Yeah, they're like rocks now. They don't even have, like, a cookie consistency. I don't even understand them. They
are
not the same.
Maybe a little tougher back in the day?
No.
they're solid sugar now? Is that it?
They're just like a crunchy thing. It's not even it's not a cookie like at all. It's horribly disappointing.
I remember Cookie Crispas being like little small cookies.
Yes, they were basically just cookies that you jammed into milk when we were kids, and now they're like caramelized rocks. They're awful.
This podcast is brought to you by diabetes.
Diabetes.
Thanks.
2 out of 4 of the people on this podcast have it. Diabetes.
How many, Tom? How many? 1/2.
I said
God
2 out of 4.
Damn it. Yeah, go reduce your goddamn fractions.
I knew that would get you going.
Do your segment, Tom, damn it.
Shit. My little segment is still going to be on Amanda Waller, actually. I want to talk about a run she had when she was leading the Suicide Squad, and she proposed that Bronze Tiger be the leader instead of Rick Flag Jr. Not only did she not particularly like Rick Flag Jr. As leader, but she thought the Bronze Tiger was the obvious leader of the group. Now, the Bronze Tiger wasn't sure that he was the best person to lead the group because he had gone through extensive brainwashing beforehand by the League of Assassins. So he's always a little worried that the League of Assassins was still in his mind. When the powers that be that were over Amanda Waller said that the Bronze Tiger was an unfit to be a leader, she took it as racially charged, and she was probably right. The way the comic book is written is that they were a little hesitant to have an African-American woman and an African-American male be the two sole leaders of the group. She later undercuts Rick Flag in a number of ways, to make sure that Bronze Tiger is taken seriously as leader of the Suicide Squad. So she is vindicated later. This is an issue of African-American leadership in a comic book that is addressed very well and very intelligently. And for Black History Month, I'm glad we were able to talk about it for at least a couple seconds. And I like Bronze Tiger. He was cool. All right, then.
Yeah,
well, that's our little segment, Sarah. I guess we should go on to plugs, because we have some great plugs. Right, Mike?
Yeah,
we do. I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing our geek rock music. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com.
I would like to thank Friendly Neighborhood Comics, my friendly and clean local comic book store.
LT?
I would like to thank IanLino.com.
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 IanLino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things. They have great stained glass prints, t-shirts, posters, Johnny Skywalker glasses, everything that you need for your geeky lifestyle.
And I would like to promote Pensacon in Pensacola, Florida, coming up very soon. I think it'll drop. We'll be there the week that this drops. That is February 17th through the 19th.
That's right. On Friday, February 17th at 1:30 p.m., we're going to be doing Stupid Supervillains and Why We Love Them in Grand Hotel Ballroom A. On Saturday, February 18th at 11 o'clock, we're going to be doing... Or excuse me, at 4 o'clock, we're going to be doing Civil Rights and Social Justice as Reflected in Comic Books in the Grand Hotel Ballroom A. At 7:45, we're going to be doing Civil Disobedience as Reflected in Comic Books or Why Luke Cage Can't Breathe. That's going to be in Grand Hotel Ballroom A. Then at 10:30, Come Win Fabulous Prizes My Wife Wants Me to Get Rid of. At Last Nerd Standing, that will be in Grand Hotel Ballroom A. And then finally on Sunday, the coup de grace of the con. We will be doing at 2:45 horrible, horrible, horrible stereotypes in comics. And what room is that going to be in, guys?
I'm guessing A.
Grand Ballroom A?
No, Grand Ballroom C. Don't be an idiot.
Damn it.
Of course it's going to be in Grand Ballroom C.
Damn it. Yeah, so we're looking forward to doing all of that. If you come down, we guarantee if you say anything... anything about this podcast, we guarantee you will win a prize during the game show. I would also like to say that we love Pensacon. If you get a chance to go to this one, please do come down and see us because it is a great, great con. All right, well, that's going to do it for us then. Thanks, everybody, for listening once again. We're so glad to do it. Mike, what is this podcast to you?
It is like Drunk History, but for comic books.
All right, and Josh... just so you know, this guy was running by. He had a whole big thing of vodka bottles. And I said, hey, you can't do this. This is Josh's sector. You know what he said?
He said this isn't Josh's sector?
That's exactly what he said. This is not your sector, Josh. So I guess he just stole from somebody. I don't know what was going on.
I don't know who was.
Yeah. LT, did you come up with a catchphrase yet?
For everybody who's going to school, watch out for them grizzly bears.
You know, I don't hate that one.
Very, very topical. I like that.
Very topical.
Current.
It's current. And remember what I say, everybody. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You'll live a lot longer. Have a great night. And thanks again from the Longbox guys.
I got a job at my uncle's moisture farm. I got a job at my uncle's moisture farm. And I just harvest that shit up. Harvest that shit up. Bad.